Blog Talk Radio.
It's showtime.
Greetings and welcome to Tag Do, Capital Area Guide Dog Users Inc. Tag Do, about your dog and you. And this show will answer some of the questions: what is a guide dog? When you get a guide dog? Why you get a guide dog? Where you get a guide dog from? And how you get a guide dog. And our very special guest will share some of those questions to those answers, and some of those answers to those questions, and also some of their experience with guide dogs. This is Tag Do, about your dog and you, and I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and thank you for listening, and welcome my listening audience. And also, Tag Do, about your dog and you, is brought to you by Capital Area Guide Dog Users, Inc. And you can get more information when you go to our website, tagdo.org. And if you have a guide dog, we encourage you to join us. But you don't have to have a guide dog. You could just love guide dogs and want to see them be treated well. So, Miss Renee, greetings, and how are you today?
I'm well, Reverend, and even though we're a non-political show, I think for us to not acknowledge what's going on in the Ukraine is to have our heads buried in the sand. So we just want to acknowledge that, our hearts and prayers are with the people of Ukraine as they go through this very, very difficult time.
Yes, we do want to acknowledge that, because we sure our show is heard all around the world, and I'm sure there's some people over there with guide dogs. I'm sure of that. Mm-hmm. So, Ms. Renee, give us that rundown for the show today, please.
Okay, well, we always begin with stop dogging us around, the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a guide dog. Introducing a guide dog into a household is a process for the handler and the family, and introducing two guide dogs is like having twins, twice the fun and twice the work. And our guest, Sue Crawford, shares what it is like to have two working dogs in one household. Back over to you, Rev.
So do you call that doggy double trouble?
Okay, I'm not touching that one with a 10-foot pole.
Okay. So we shall.
But I guess we will learn if there's the good, the bad, and the ugly of having two working dogs in a household. I guess we'll learn that today.
All right. So
you like that,
yeah,
huh?
Segment. Yeah. Yeah, I like that. So our segment, Stop Dogging You Around, and that is brought to you by one of our sponsors who's been a major sponsor and with us for a long time, and that is Real-Time Pain Relief, the best smelling, most effective real-time pain relief lotion in the world. You just rub it on, and the pain is gone. And Stop Dogging Us Around, good, the bad, and the ugly, using a guide dog with us. A lot of good, as our guests and all our guests have told you. If you write it down on the ledger, what's good about having a guide dog and what's bad about it and what's ugly, you will come up with twice as much on the good side. But there are some downsides that we're fighting with politically all the time, and one of them is experiencing, and I don't know, more and more it's always a good and a bad to something. It's nice to have this new Uber and Lyft and all. I mean, Uber, Lyft and all, where you can call and have an app on your phone to, you know, get transportation to come to you, because you can track, you know, who you're calling and all that kind of thing. But now when you out in the street and you're doing it like, well, you hailing a cab, or well, still a number of us do that in D.C. area, not so much in Montgomery County or Prince George County, but in Montgomery County and in D.C., we're still all hailing cabs on the street, and cabs are still passing us by with guide dogs. And I had a couple of instances with that. And fortunately, I have had individuals that, you know, for one reason or another, was really a guide dog enthusiast and supporters, and they would jump out in front of the cab and try to make the cab driver stop and all of that. And, you know, don't put people through that. But if you can, get them to get the information of the cab, which I have done several times, and advise other blind people that have guide dogs if a taxi cab passes by, because by law they cannot do that. And I have pursued it to the point where I filed in D.C., because that's what it happened for me, went down to the Department of Rights, and you know, and they contacted the cab companies and set up a hearing, and we came in and, you know, had some negotiations about them, you know, passing me up and stuff. So it takes out a little time, which a lot of people don't want to take time out to do these things. But Charlie Crawford would always tell you that you have to advocate for yourself. And it's going to take putting a little skin in the game. You got to put some skin in the game. It's going to take a little time to do these things. And now guest is going to, one of the real advocates, and would tell you, you know, you can't just sit around and talk about what people are not doing and what they should be doing. No, you got to get in the game and get out there. And yes, it's going to take some time out of your life, but if you want to make a difference and you want to be at the table and be part of the solution and not the problem, this is what you have to do. So, like I said, and even with Uber, we are still having problems with Uber drivers that come to pick up a person with a guide dog, or they will, you know, they will refuse to take them and pull off. And so we are really pursuing those instances when they happen. All righty, so you can always get in touch with the ACB, American Council of the Blind, .org. If you're having that issue, please go to the website, get their information, and call them and let them know that you're one of the persons that Uber or Lyft, but it seems like it's Uber for some reason, not, you know, picking up persons with guide dogs and just leaving them hanging, just pulling off, leaving them hanging. And we don't want you to go postal or nothing like that, be reading about you, nothing, then, you know, dog didn't fit their cab driver, or you didn't, they took your cane and banged on the windows or something. So we don't want to resort to that kind of thing, at least not right now, anyway. So that is stop dogging me around, the good, the bad, and the ugly, using a guide dog. And again, it is brought to you by the real-time pain relief, the best smelling, most effective real-time pain relief lotion in the world. You just rub it on, and the pain is gone. Ms. Renee, back over to you to introduce our special guest.
Well, again, our guest is Sue Crawford, and she's sharing what it is like to have two working dogs in one household and her work in transportation for persons with disabilities. Welcome, Sue.
Thank you, Ms. Renee, and thank you, Reverend Ray. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you. We really, really do appreciate it. People that take their time out to do anything with anybody these days is really a premium gift. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And we promise the first time around to be gentle. But after that, we treat you like family. You know how family get treated these days. Okay, Ms. Renee, so let's start with the first question. Tell us a little about her.
Okay, well,
go ahead, Ms. Renee.
As Reverend Ray oftentimes says, Sue, you can look anything up on Google. So we try to add the personhood to the questions we ask. So did you grow up in this area?
No, I actually grew up in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and then moved to the Boston area after college.
Okay.
Charlie and I came down here in 1998 when he was recruited by ACB to serve as its executive director.
And for our guests that are unfamiliar with the ACB, I know we here in the DMV, the District, Maryland, and Virginia, speak all in acronyms. What is the ACB?
The American Council of the Blind. And most states have chapters, even affiliates as well.
Okay. You mentioned the American Council for the Blind. Well, when did you begin to lose your sight, and can you tell us a little bit about that?
I have retinitis pigmentosa. So it, and when I was growing up, the way it, my case was is I thought I pretty much had normal vision. I had some other vision problems, but you know, nothing like that. And so I thought I had normal vision growing up, and I even got my driver's license when I was 16 and all that. And I will say that driving was the first thing I noticed that I wasn't good at that I cared about. So there's lots of things that I'm not good at, but I didn't care about it. But I could drive, but I didn't feel comfortable. Then once I graduated from college and moved to the Boston area, the traffic up there is so crazy and the public transit so plentiful that it wasn't an issue, so I didn't drive up there. But when I began to, I lost a lot of vision in my late 20s, and then I got a, which I suppose is the next question about when did you get a guide dog? So, am I rushing things?
No.
Before
we come back there, let me ask, and I'm glad, you know, you didn't realize about the driving after hitting a couple of people that you realized before then. You say you wasn't that interested in driving?
Well, it wasn't that I was interested in driving, but I found that I just wasn't that good at it. I mean, it was stressful to drive. I had to pay attention all the time, and it just wasn't a natural thing that I could do, and I didn't understand why. But once I lived in Boston, it was an issue since I didn't need to drive. So
as your sight got more, it became more pronounced that you were having some vision problems. How did you find out, and what kind of conversations did you have with yourself about your vision changing so much?
So I had a huge loss of vision at one point, and I went to my ophthalmologist, and he was actually wonderful, Dr. Vinger in Lexington, Massachusetts. And he said, have you ever thought about the benefits of declaring yourself legally blind? And, of course, that had never, ever occurred to me. And he said, there are a lot of them. What he didn't say was that in Massachusetts, doctors are required to register any patient that they determine is legally blind. But he didn't say, I have to do this. He said, there's benefits, vocational rehab, and there's a lot of other benefits. So, you know, and then even after that, it probably took me another couple of years before I actually requested orientation mobility services. And, you know, you have your pride. You know, you consider yourself a sighted person. And then, you know, you have a couple close calls in traffic. And you think, well, I can either keep my pride and die young, or I can
It's funny.
It is. I mean, that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's time for you to just set aside your pride, learn to use a cane, and you can get on with life, which I did. But then when I was how old was I? I got a part-time job, and in Boston, and it was with a child welfare agency, which was at that time the Department of
Now. Okay. One moment, Sue. When you hear that music, that means Mr. Ray got to take a break because he got to pay some bills and pay people like Miss Renee and you know, because I don't want them to form a union on me like Amazon and all them people doing. So anyway, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back on the other side with our very special guest, Sue Crawford, to continue telling us about her journey from sighted to blind. Miss Renee.
You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital, which includes Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information we share is for guide dog users everywhere. Back over to our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and our very special guest, Susan Crawford.
Sue, just before you get talking about your part-time job, a couple of things. Did you have siblings, and were they blind or not blind, and how did you relate to them? And part B to that, how did your parents deal with having a now teenager or young adult that's out on her own and dealing with some challenges?
Okay, well, there's five kids, so I have four siblings. I have two brothers and two sisters. I have an older brother, and then I'm the second oldest daughter. The three younger kids have no vision problems. Both brothers and I had problems. But I didn't really, it really didn't, the onset for me wasn't until adulthood. My parents treated us pretty much the same. I think they're doing the best they could. I mean, I know they understood what was happening. But I think there's also a lot of denial that goes on with parents. I don't fault them for that. I think, you know, it was good that I was out there on my own. And my brother, I was in Boston. My brother Mike was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And then the younger siblings were different places. But, yeah, so it.
So yes, go ahead. There you go.
I had a part-time job in child protection and social work. I was a social worker. And it was on Causeway Street in Boston, which at that time was, still is, an incredibly busy street. But at that time you had the elevated expressway and you had the elevated green line. And then you had the traffic. And it was incredibly congested, very dangerous crossing Causeway Street. So I asked my O&M instructor to come and take a look. And Paul McDade, and he came down, and we walked around the area. You know, so this is a guy that teaches people to use the white canes. And, you know, usually the O&M instructors are pro-white cane, you know, and the people who wanted guide dogs were separate from the people who were advocating for guide dogs. But we walked around a bit. He said, well, let's go in and sit down. So we went into a McDonald's and got something to drink. He said, okay. I said, I'm going to tell you. He said, this is a really tough area because the traffic is really going pretty fast. People are either getting on the expressway or they're getting off, and nobody's in a good mood. And they're not going to stop me.
No, nobody's in a good mood.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to get a guide dog. He said, the difference for you is to get a guide dog. He said, because a guide dog will help you and will judge when it's safe to cross. And even though a driver might not stop for you, they all love dogs. He said, for you, and this is really important, he said, for you, it's going to be the difference between riding a tricycle and driving a Cadillac. He said, it's going to be that huge a difference. This is an O&M instructor.
Wow.
And, and I had O&M from him. And, and he said, it's going to be that dramatic a difference. So then I put in an application, but I was a single parent, and my son was in first grade, I think, kindergarten, first grade. And I couldn't, at that time, all of the schools were residential schools, and you went away for 4 weeks for your first dog. I couldn't leave him. There was one school that had what they called community training. They came out to your home area, and there's a benefactor, or they stay in the hotel somewhere, and they trained you in your community. So I applied to Fidelco, and then about, 8 months later, John Byfield came out. He was a guide dog instructor from Fidelco at that point, the most wonderful, wonderful person in the whole wide world, in my opinion. And he brought Sasha, who was a German Shepherd. She was completely black. Well, I shouldn't say that. I think she had tan paws, but she was pretty much all black. And then we began training. And it was really great. I actually like hometown training because they really customize it to what you need. So in my case, I needed to run the subway, the T, as it's called in Boston. And we did a whole bunch of stuff like that. My son, of course, loved Sasha right off the bat. And, at that time, I wasn't married. And so it was just one dog and one child, and I worked part-time. And then Charlie and I got married in 1986, and that's when we became a two-dog family. And his dog was Raisin, a different Raisin than the Raisin that I have now. Her name was Raisin, and she was a German Shepherd, and she was a wonderful dog. There was no question about the dogs getting along. They got along wonderfully. And then, of course, Steve said, "Well, you guys have dogs. I want a cat." So there was a fine door offer. So then he picked out a cat, and then and Charlie had cats. His cat had died. We got married. So anyway, and there we were, two dogs and a cat, and it worked out beautifully. So in Boston.
It sounds like a story. Two dogs and a cat. Let's tell you what happened next.
the thing I will say about Uber and Lyft and all that, this was in the mid to late 80s and 90s. Of course, there were no shared ride services then. We never had a problem with a taxi driver refusing to take us. For my job, I travel around quite a bit, and I could even go into the toughest areas and get a ride. They might not like it. The driver says, "Well, why are we going here? This is a really tough area." It's for my work, I'm not going on vacation here. But they never refused to take me. And this one guy was afraid of Sasha. He thought she was a wolf because her head was all black. But he nonetheless took me, made lovely conversation, and then he got out and opened the passenger side door for me to get out. I mean, we just found the taxi drivers in Boston to be wonderful during that time. Once we came down here, it seemed to be a different story. And then, of course, there's Uber and Lyft. But yeah.
Why do you think it was the attitude was different, Sue? Do you think the culture? I mean, because of education, or they saw enough guide dogs with people that they was educated? Or what do you think was the difference?
Well, this is a much larger urban area than Boston. And then I'm not sure I can put my finger on it, except Boston has the Perkins School for the Blind. And I think back to the residential school, and that had a lot of community support. And I'm not exactly sure why. It may just have also been a change in attitude. But when we lived there, we didn't really have a problem with that. We didn't actually I took cabs for my work, but we really didn't take that many cabs because we always walked and took buses and the subway and we did a lot of walking.
Let me ask you this before you move to the next area, Ms. Nay. You and Charlie was very involved in the blind community, because a lot of times Just because you're blind, it doesn't mean that you're involved in the blind movement or the blind community because you're blind. I mean, unfortunately, the uneducated in the sight of the world, you know, they figure like, hey, if you're a blind person, you know all the other blind person people in the world. But that is not true, that all blind people are connected to the blind community, and that has to be an intentional thing. It's just because you're blind, you're just not like all of a sudden, you know, mailed into the community. So you
right.
and Charlie was intentionally involved in the community, correct?
Charlie was, and he became commissioner, Mass Commissioner of the Blind. He was appointed by Governor Dukakis, and then twice, and then later by Governor Weld. And so he and I used to accompany him to both the NFB and the state NFB and the state ACB meetings. But I, you know, I had a separate job. I was in child protection social work. And then, you know, I was also a mom. And so I was also a room mother when my son was in third and fifth grade. And, you know, you do all those things. You know, I was in charge of car washes when Steve was in debates. And, I mean, you do all those regular things. Charlie was the one who was really into the blindness. And we kind of, you know, there would have been a conflict of interest for me to do too much when we were in Massachusetts, just because, you know, he was a state official. So, but, you know, we both learned about computers way back in the day, got interested in that. When we came down here then, that's when I actually started to get involved in disability stuff, because I got a job at with the media. I one of the things I did in child protection social work was I was oversaw the statewide mediation for parents and others. So I got into mediation, which down here with Keybridge Foundation, they provided the mediation program for the Department of Justice for the ADA program. So if you file a complaint with DOJ under the ADA, there are a number of options, and one of them is they offer mediation. So that went to Keybridge. And then later, I got a job with the Department of Justice, and I became an investigator and then a senior investigator, and that's all ADA enforcement work. So I did that, which was a fabulous job. That's how one, you know. And then in 2013, I moved over to HUD, where I was the director of civil rights, compliance, and disability rights at HUD for all the recipients if there were complaints. Well, if there were complaints that went out to one of the 50, way more than 50 agencies who investigate, but if it got appealed, it came to my office. So that's how I got involved in disability stuff, was really after we came down here. So.
Oh. So you was in the HUD building down in Southwest on 7th Street?
Yeah. Wow. Until 2 years. 2 years ago in March.
Wow. Okay. But I ran the facility in that building for a while.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. I was down there with Lewis, with those people, Lewis, Michael, Eddie, Cunningham, all them folks for a while.
Yeah.
Well, I know you're tripping. I know you're tripping down memory lane, but I want to go back to something you said about the dog. You know, early on, your trainer said, or your OMB, and we need to spell this out, orientation mobility instructor, said you were going to go from riding a tricycle to a Cadillac. Was that your experience? Okay. And what was most surprising? Okay.
Well,
we're having a little audio. We might have you call in on another line when we break in about a minute. Because your audio is going up and down. So, you know what, we're going to take our break, and we'll let you call in on another line. Leave that line open and see if we can get a better audio.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
Tell me the number, because I hadn't memorized it.
Okay.
What's the number?
The number is 218. I'm sorry. 215-38-3872. 215-383-3872.
Leave this line open, and we'll see if we can get a little bit better connection. Okay. Well, time for a station break, and we want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in the Tacoma Park neighborhood of Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they have it. They have door-to-door deliveries in the DMV. That's the District, Maryland, and Virginia. So give them a call at 202-747-3434. That's 202-747-3434. Well, while Sue is getting her another line, we're going to see if we can get a better connection. Okay, it sounds like I think we have a little better connection. Okay. So we were asking you, did you go from the tricycle to the Cadillac per your instructions?
I really did. I really did. It was phenomenal because I learned to use the cane as an adult, but I hadn't zipped around using a cane as a child. And I tended to walk fairly slowly and paying attention every second to where I was. And then you're looking for the landmarks, the light pole or the trash can or whatever. And it's not a natural way of walking for what I was used to. And then when I got a guide dog, it just zoom, zoom, zoom. You just zip right along. And it was really fabulous. And, you know, you stop at the corner. When it was important to pause or stop, Sasha did that. We could travel at night. We could travel all over. It was absolutely wonderful. And I could go a normal speed, which with a cane, I could only go as fast as I could stop. Because if my cane hit something, I had to pay attention to that and stop right away, which is not true with a guide dog. Plus, a guide dog is just easier to have a conversation start up around. People would say hello, people would chat a little bit. My job did take me into some really tough areas of Boston, Cambridge. I went down to Brockton. I covered a lot of Eastern Massachusetts, and a lot of it isn't a great area. But I always felt safe with my dog. And she was a wonderful dog, and then Charlie in those days, oh my goodness, Charlie walked so fast that nobody could keep up with him. But he would you stop at every corner and you wait for the person who's behind. But the guide dogs really were just spectacular and are. And now I have Raisin. And now I have Raisin and Caltag, and this is a different Raisin. This is a little black Labrador Raisin.
Right.
So,
right.
Well, you know, two things you mentioned that I'm curious about. One is you sort of glossed over a little bit how you met Charlie. We're going to come back to that one in just a second. But you said you were a room mother and you did a lot of stuff for your son Steve. How were you? Okay, so how were you and the dog received in the classroom?
You know, it just was not an issue at all. It just wasn't. Hmm. It wasn't. And then also nowadays, when you think about what happens when you want to have an assistance animal in your housing, well, I rented a duplex, and I just said, you know, I was told I need to get a guide dog, so I'm applying for a guide dog. And they said, well, okay. And then when Sasha came, I said, well, I got my guide dog. And they said, okay. It was just a non-issue, whereas nowadays it's so much more complicated. You know, they want it can be a real hassle. Now, there should be no charge. There should be no deposit, no additional fee, none of that. But that's not necessarily what people face nowadays. So.
Let me get my second question in, Rev, and then I'll let you take it. Okay, so how and when did you and Charlie meet, and was it love at first meeting?
Well, I met Charlie. Yeah. I met Charlie in 1980. Yeah, 1980. And then we married in 86. So there was a process there, but I will say that he was, it's hard not to just go crazy over Charlie, I think. So, anyway.
That's true.
That is a beautiful sentiment. So were you melding two dog households at that point?
No, we didn't live together before we got married. I mean,
But when you got married, did you each have a dog that you had to bring into this new household?
Yeah, we each had a guide dog. Yep, we each had a guide dog, and we got married. And then probably a few months later, we got a cat. So by then we were
okay.
And we had the most wonderful address. Our address was 1 Cherry Street. Which was
oh wow,
dad.
1 Cherry Street.
So sounds like a Dr. Seuss book.
So let me ask you this: what number dog are you on now?
So I had Sasha, who was wonderful, and she lived to be 12. I worked until she was 11.
Oh, that's a long
then
time.
Then I had I had Xana, but there was a dog in between. And I had to retire her when she was 8 because she was extremely high strung, and she became very aggressive, and she would shake if she heard any noise at all, like a car backfiring or a horn or anything. So Charlie's twin brother Manny, who was wonderful, he offered to take her. So she went down. She retired to Miami. And we all used to say we all want to retire to Miami.
You ain't kidding.
Yeah. And then I got Xana, who was a German Shepherd. Oh, she was wonderful, and my second dog, whom I retired, was Gaia. And then I got Xana, who was a German Shepherd, and she was fabulous. And that's when I was down here, and then worked at Justice, and she and I traveled. I think she and I hit about 35 states. We did a lot of traveling back then.
Wow.
And sometimes we traveled just the two of us as a team. Charlie and I traveled together too. But, so she was a German Shepherd. She worked till she was 13. She died, but we kept her, and she lived to be 14. And then Charlie had the first Raisin, and then he had, the first Raisin. Then there was a dog that didn't work out. And then he got Ruthie, who was the most, she's just such a sweetheart. She was a black lab. And then after Ruthie, then there was another dog Then after Ruthie, he got a dog, but then he had the ruptured aneurysm. So then that dog went back to seeing eye and was placed with someone else. Then after he had recovered enough in his physical therapy, he applied to Seeing Eye for a guide dog. And Lucas Frank said, well, you've got to be able to walk a mile before we'll give you a guide dog. So then we just started walking and walking and walking and got up to the point where he could walk 2 miles. And he went, and then he got a Seeing Eye dog named Mason, the big yellow lab. I think you met Mason. I think he did. Maybe not.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mason was a wonderful dog.
And, you know, that's so important to talk about the physical capability of a handler also. So now you have two dogs. You introduced them into the household. You said there was no problem in the adjustment. With each dog coming, you having one from Fidelco and he having one from Seeing Eye, was there a difference in philosophy and how you handled your dogs? Was that very much different?
I don't know if there's a different philosophy, but there's different commands, different language.
Okay.
But and he never used my guide dog, and I never used his. I can tell you one story. It was a beautiful day. I don't know, maybe June or something, and we thought, well, we need to clean out our garage. We had a garage under the house, and then a driveway that went up to the street. we're going to clean out the garage. And these, and we did not have a fenced yard. We said, these dogs are so good. They're just such wonderful, wonderful dogs. We don't need to tether them. It's a quiet morning. Quiet morning in the summer. They'll stay right around us because they're always so quiet while we do this. So we let them out. And bam, they were off.
Free at last.
Free at last. So we walked around, each with our cane. Our neighbor got in his truck, and he drove around. And actually, they had only gone two houses away where there was a dog tethered, and they were just hanging out. But after that, we never let them out. I mean, either one we could let out loose. Like if I wanted to do something in the yard, Sasha could be with me or Charlie could have Raisin with him. But we never let them out together again because, boy, that's when they were double trouble. So
They became a gang. So, Sue, was there a discussion with you and Charlie, knowing both of y'all was blind, both of y'all had dogs? How much discussion was that before y'all decided to get married?
In terms of the dogs?
Two blind people coming together with dogs.
An issue. I mean, there are a lot of issues when you get married, especially when I had a child, but that was never, ever an issue. Now, I will say Charlie, and I was telling someone recently that I don't remember when this happened, but I know it was well before we got married, and I had a dream, and I was in a car, and I was in the front passenger seat, and Charlie was driving, and he just leaned over, and he said, here's a map. You need to look at the map and then give me the directions on how to do this. And I said, but I can't see maps anymore. I can't really see that. And I thought, and in my dream, I think, well, how is it you're driving and we're not crashing into everything? And I thought, you know, if you can do that, then I can do this. And so that's to say, I was talking to Terry Pacheco recently, and she said, but Charlie just had so much confidence, and he gave me confidence, but then I gave him confidence. And so Charlie just always had, I mean, you know that about Charlie. He was just and it's interesting, when he passed away, and I was talking with, he had an uncle who was was just a couple years older, more like a cousin, really. And Eben said, you know, the thing that always impressed him about Charlie was that he said his blindness never stopped him. It just never stopped him. So, anyway.
So now you have both dogs. How do you handle that?
Now I do have both dogs. when Charlie passed away, and Raisin had been placed with someone else first, and it wasn't a successful placement, went back to seeing I and then was placed with Charlie. Amazingly enough, the first dog, Raisin, he had also been placed with someone else, and it didn't work out. And then they placed that Raisin with Charlie, and that was beautiful. So I have Raisin, and this is her home. I mean, she's staying here. So I have Raisin and Caltag. Now, the thing of it is, it's also the pandemic, and I'm not going anywhere. You know, I've basically been home. I've not been on a bus or the subway since, you know, I think it was March 5th of 2020. But what I do is when the weather's, you know, if it's not like, you know, in the 20s, I'll put one in a harness and go out for a walk in the neighborhood and come back and take the harness off that dog and get the appropriate harness for the other dog and take that dog for a walk in the neighborhood. I mean, the words may be different, but they're interchangeable. And I'll say get busy for Caltech. I'll also tell them park time. Same thing for Raisin. And we walk in the neighborhood. And I've explained that to Seeing Eye as well. Because Raisin loves to work. She loves to work.
Wow.
And so we do that. But we've not been on a bus or a subway or anything. So
Yeah,
so that's what we're doing for now.
Well, you know, I want to go back to something you said earlier, that you were part of Child Protection Social Services. Did you make home visits, and did you take your seeing eye guide dog with you? I mean, your
guide dog went everywhere. I went
okay.
to area offices, and then I went to the offices of providers, and so like daycare centers and stuff like that. I did a bunch of different jobs when I was at DSS, but the job I did for the most length of time was I was an administrative hearings officer, and
mm-hmm.
for that I had traveled to the area offices, and then you held the hearing wherever the where the decision was made, and people could appeal decisions to child abuse and neglect, alleged perpetrator designations, denials of foster care, adoptive care applications, adoption subsidy denials and terminations, all kinds of decisions. And so,
mm-hmm.
and I always took my guide dog, and I would take cabs on occasion if I had to get to some tough areas. I always tipped the drivers well if I was going into a tough area. I was
mm-hmm.
once in Brockton, and I would go to Ashmont on the Red Line and then take, they called it the BAT bus, the Brockton Area Transit bus to Brockton. And then I got a call that evening from, I think it was from Dave Darr. He was instructor at Fidelco then. And he said, "Did I see you in Brockton today?" I said, "Oh, yeah, that's right. I was in Brockton." He said, "What are you doing there? That's a tough area." I said, "Well, I was there for work. I had to be there for work." And I said, "You didn't see me there at 2 in the morning. You saw me like at 9 in the morning, which is different." I thought there was a real advantage to having a guide dog, because that is a fair amount of protection, especially if you have one that's pretty much all black.
Yeah.
One time I was down, I was in a...
Hold your point, Sue. We've got our last break.
All right.
And I want to hear this story. You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and we're located in the nation's capital. Back to Reverend Ray and our guest, Sue Crawford. Our co-founder and co-host, Charlie Crawford, passed away 9/11/2020, and we have asked his other half, Sue Crawford, to share a bit of their life together as co-guide dog users and how they handled those responsibilities. So back over to you, Rev, for your next, for the end of the story of her being in Brockton on the Batmobile. I mean, the Bat
bus in Brockton.
So this work was visiting households and with clients
I didn't do home visits as much. I pretty much... So if someone had filed a child abuse and neglect report and there was an investigation, then if there was a decision that substantiating child abuse or neglect, then that could be appealed. And I did the appeals. And so at that time, the way the agency did it is they wanted a clinical position, a clinical social work position in the office of the general counsel. So there were four of us for statewide that would go around and do hearings. And so it was very interesting work. It's really hard work. It's not pleasant work at times. Most of the time it wasn't pleasant work, but it was very meaningful work. And I just figured once I lost my vision, if they asked me to do anything, I would say yes. I did child fatality investigations. I did policy. I did revenue maximization. I did ombuds work. I did the parent-adolescent mediation program. You know, because the administrative accounts in these agencies are never well-funded. And if you had a pulse and you were willing to work, they didn't care whether you had a disability. They were just desperate. And I would say that to anyone who's looking for a job, don't think about how you're going to do it. Just get in there and say yes, and then do it to the best of your ability.
No, they are soul-numbing work, but it's important work, and I'm so glad that people like you who care were there helping and being an advocate for the children in these situations. Let me ask you something. Do you think not being able to see what's going on in the room made you a better listener than, because you've got people in those rooms, sometimes you've got two or three people representing different points of view. Did that, was that an aid for you, being able to listen to what everybody was saying instead of being distracted by the visual?
Well, okay, so I think both are true, but in a hearing, everything's recorded. So I take the tape recorder with me, and you know, everybody, you know, have a formal start to it, so everybody in. It's all based on evidence. So once they start talking, that's evidence. That's all, mm-hmm. you know, it's all on the tape recorder. It's not video evidence. It's audio tape evidence, plus whatever documents they submit. And that's what the decisions have to be based on. And it has to be based on the evidentiary record. And so it has to be, you can't just say, you know, well, I could tell on their face that they were such and so. It has to be based on what the actual evidence was.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we kept our lives, we kept our professional work was pretty separate because, again, there would be conflict of interest for me to do too much stuff in the world, in the blindness world, because that was Charlie's realm in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it worked out fine. So, and I was part-time until my son was in ninth grade. And then for a whole bunch of reasons, they shuffled things around, and then I started full-time. But So
what was the change coming from Boston to Washington, D.C., in different agencies here, a whole different sort of different vibe? I don't want to say a different culture, but a little different vibe.
But it is a different culture. It's very tough work. Where I worked, I kind of sort of knew the cultures. It's very difficult work. I came down here. I figured, I don't know these cultures. I want to pick, and that's why I chose mediation. Let me see if I can kind of get focus in there. And then I was fortunate enough. Janine Warden, who is probably one of the best supervisors I've ever had and mentors, she hired me at DOJ, at Department of Justice, and she was wonderful. But, yeah, so when we were first thinking about coming down here, and Charlie said no a few times because we didn't think we'd ever leave our wonderful house on Cherry Street. But there were a few, the job really appealed to Charlie. But also the weather, you know, because winters are so long there. You know, you could have a lot of snow up until like the first couple weeks of April. And so it's a long winter. Interestingly enough, Charlie was, he always hated winter. I always said I liked it, but he did not probably 90% of the shoveling. Well, Steve too, but then Steve went off to college. He did the shoveling. He would shovel several times during a storm. The weather's definitely appealing down here. You know, he had a cousin down here. I had siblings down here. So, and now, Stephen and Caitlin and our grandchildren live in Arlington, so I get to see them very often. So that's
nice. What lessons do you think your work life taught you?
Well, so I've had a bunch of different jobs. I started out as a special ed teacher. I had tenure and everything. And so I think you just have to be flexible, of course, especially if you work in the public sector, because, you know, funds change, jobs change. And in there, I was able to get a master's degree, too. I think it's just being flexible and choosing something and then just going with it, you know, as long as you feel it's work that you want to do. Just go with it, and I did that. Towards the end of when we were there, the state agency decided they want to come up with an automated case record system, and that's back when we were moving from DOS to Graphical User Interface Windows, and that was a real challenge. And Charlie kind of helped me behind the scenes there, and I brought in. I was able to bring in people that could really help with that. But the bottom line is coming here was just a real opportunity for Charlie, and I think we are ready for a change and the better weather. You know, we have a real spring here, which I love. I like winter. I just like a shorter winter.
Exactly. I relate to that. Any favorite stories from your work life?
For my work life.
Well, we can do your personal life with Charlie. any favorite stories that you want to leave our listeners with, because we're almost at the end of our hour, believe it or not.
Well, in terms of, you're talking about what did we have to negotiate once we got married and with the dogs. And Charlie was so incredible. So we got married, and then at some point, you know, you have your disagreement. And Charlie said, okay, now let's stop. He said, now, you take my position, I'll take your position. And I said, what? You know, he said, yeah, we'll switch sides. I said, well, that's stupid. He said, no, let's try it. And so we do that. And then pretty soon you kind of get into it, and you really understand, and another thing. And it would, you get to see that there, the other person had a point, and that, you know, and there was a germ of truth in what they were saying, and it was very, I thought that was wonderful. I mean, he was the easiest person in the world to be married to. So there was that. And then, and I guess that's just it. You know, just, you know, in a...
Yeah. Yeah.
And work, especially if you're fortunate enough to be in a relationship and be married, you know, just, you know, do whatever you can to enjoy, maybe have a sense of humor, maybe see the other person may have a point, you know. I was very fortunate. So.
Let me ask you a quick one.
Go ahead, Rev.
Yeah. How long you, Charlie, been married?
We are married about 34 and a half years. Yeah, it was.
Wow.
Wow.
Yep.
That's great.
How did you, because even now the courts are dealing with blind people having children, and I know NLB is fighting that in some courts. So how did your child, you being a single parent, and your child being raised by two blind adults, how did that affect their life?
It was a total non-issue. It just was a non-issue in Massachusetts. Yeah. And then it just was. And Steve, you know, he went on to college. He went to Harvard Law School. He's an attorney. He married a wonderful woman. You know, it just was a non-issue. So.
Wow, must have been. He went on to Harvard, and well, that's wonderful. That's what. Well, Sue, thank you so much. I know we wanted to give you some time to, you know, to adjust—not adjust, but some time between the time that Charlie passed and us asking you to come on. And we appreciate the graciousness of you coming on, because we kept Charlie's chair open for a whole year before we had to take the old black hood off of his microphone, but nobody can feel his shoes. Every now and then we might
nobody
have
can feel his shoes, that's for sure.
No.
Yeah.
He, in just the short time that I've worked with him, I learned so much from him, and I really appreciate the time I spent with him. So thank you, Sue, very, very much for being
thank
our
you
guest.
So much.
And we have 2 hours of when we interviewed Charlie about his life. We didn't know he was a twin, but we found out some interesting things about him, that he was a twin and the whole thing with, you know, the places he had traveled and all. So we really, really appreciated that. And that was going to our website, so many, many people have visited that to hear his interview. So thanks again, and God bless you, and we shall be in touch. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, both of you. Thank you.
Well, you have been listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You, Capital Area's Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is cagdu2020@gmail.com. That's C-A-G-D as in David, U, 2020. Want to listen to this show again or a past show? Go to our website, cagdu.org, and click on the radio show button at the top. Or you can give us a call at 301 201-263-7371. That's 301-263-7371. Rev, any closing remarks? Rev?
Oh.
You hear me?
Rev, I lost you for a minute. No, I didn't. I lost you for a minute.
I think you had me muted, didn't you?
I wasn't going to take the call.
You had me muted.
Yes, you know,
sometimes that's like when you see guest hosts, that's like you hear co-hosts end up with their own shows. You know, they have certain ways how they make that happen. But My time, you've been listening to Cashew about this dog and you. My time is up. I thank you for your time. Until the next time, this is Reverend Ray, and I'd like to say, you know, hug your honey, protect your pooch. God bless and be blessed.
Thank you for listening. Tune in for more information about guide dogs and you next week at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.